It's great to see everyone here today, especially the visitors. Always glad to have you here. Contrary to popular belief, the Easter Bunny did not die for our sins, but he will be enjoyed by me and Sharon. Anyway, so if you're following along this morning, we're going to be in Matthew. We're going to start off in Matthew 28, in verse 1. Being Easter today, I thought that we'd kind of focus on that, focus on the significance of that and things like that, and hopefully help you to understand that each and every day is almost like that Easter day. Just as each and every day is a celebration of Jesus, what he did for us. So let's read our text. We'll start off Matthew chapter 28 and verse 1. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the woman, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He is risen. Just as he said, come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell the disciples, he has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There will you see him. Now I have told you." So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell the disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, where they will see me." What a wonderful and great thing. They had went there as dejected followers of Jesus, who thought he came to be a physical king on this earth, a physical king that would drive out the Romans, and they would once again have their nation as one. They didn't understand what he was saying, and it all fell apart on that day. You can imagine how low they felt, how they felt dejected and humiliated, how they felt for their lives, because they were followers of Jesus. And here this angel who shone, that sneeze coming out there, who shone so brightly to them. You know, I went to the eye doctor yesterday, dilated my eyes, and you know, without sunglasses, all the white cars looked like they were glowing. You know, and I could about imagine how that angel glowed whenever they looked at him. And he met them on the road. What a wonderful thing that they could actually see Jesus again. That what had happened was not like other people. Now, we talked last week, a week before, when Jesus triumphantly entered Jerusalem. And people praised him. He had just raised Lazarus, who lived in town nearby. And they followed him. This was the man that had raised Lazarus. Maybe they would even see Lazarus again. But now Jesus was killed. And we read of the prophets in the past performing miracles, but not after they were deceased. And that's what Jesus was at that time. That's what they thought. Now if we turn to Mark chapter 16, starting in verse 1, we see a similar account. Mark 16:1, "When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might go anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. 'Don't be alarmed,' he said. 'You're looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go tell his disciples and Peter, he's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you.' Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid." We read this, and we read it through the fog of history, the fog of time, and it pales in comparison of what it was like to actually be there. To expect to go and pay a loving tribute to someone they loved and followed. And as they got there, they found out that he had risen and went to heaven. It was so incredulous to them that they were afraid to even say anything because it was such a strange thing. In verse 9 of Mark 16, when Jesus rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had driven seven demons. She went and told those who had been with him and who were mourning and weeping. When they heard that Jesus was alive and that she had seen him, they did not believe him. It's hard to believe that someone can rise from the dead. Now, I know they saw Jesus raise Lazarus. I know they saw him heal. I know they saw all these miracles. But again, Jesus was crucified. And Jesus was buried. And there he lay. And it's over for them. Their movement is over. Verse 12. Afterward, Jesus appeared in a different form to two of them while they were walking in the country. They returned and reported it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. It's so hard to believe sometimes. And with the great things that Jesus has done for us, the great things that God has done for us, the great miracles that are there, and the things that happen in our own lives. Verse 14, later Jesus appeared to the 11 as they were eating. He rebuked them for their lack of faith and their stubborn refusal to believe those who had seen him after he had risen. Now Jesus said he was coming back, but they didn't fully understand that. They were still stuck in that world where they were going to have the nation of Israel as it was when they were free. And the Romans wouldn't be, controlling them and, taking from them what belonged to them. So they were still in that mode. And they still didn't believe that Jesus had risen until he showed himself there. In verse 15, he said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. But whoever does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. In my name they will drive out demons. They will speak in new tongues. They will pick up snakes with their hands, and when they drink deadly poison, it will not hurt them at all. They will place their hands on sick people, and they will get well." After the Lord Jesus had spoken to them, he was taken up into heaven, and he sat at the right hand of God. Then the disciples went out and preached everywhere. And the Lord worked with them and confirmed his words by the signs that accompanied them. How do you think Christianity got started in that kind of world back then? When the leader is seemingly deceased by all accounts, by the those who control the world at that time, these disciples were dejected. Do you think they would have went to their deaths, as tradition tells us, the different ways they died for a lie, if Jesus had not risen? With all the oppression from the Jewish leaders at that time and the Romans at that time, do you think it would have ever blossomed and grown from there? It would have been crushed. If we read Luke chapter 24, starting in verse 9, when they came back to the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the woman, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the stripes of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. It was incredulous that someone had risen from the dead. Now they saw what Jesus went through to get to that cross. They saw the beatings and the bleeding and everything. It was death by a thousand cuts, so to speak. He was flailed. He was beat. He was kicked. He was tortured. They made him carry his own cross all the way to that hill. They nailed him to that. They didn't just tie him like most convicts. They nailed him to that cross. And in that weakened state, Jesus got up. He said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Which really means, he's not asking to forgive him, but let it happen, is really what the word means. Don't save me off this cross. At any time, Jesus could have said, "I don't want to, it's not worth it. So many are not going to love me. So many are not going to follow me. Just a few are going to follow me. But he did not call for help. And in the end, his last words, as he took from that sponge, the sour wine, so that he could speak the last words, "It is finished." He nailed the Old Testament to the cross there. No more sacrifices and rolling sins back. No more having to follow the law perfectly in order to be considered perfect. But just like the Passover lamb, he was going to have God pass over us. What a terrible day that someone who is not in Christ is going to have to stand there and hear everything that they did, knowing full well that there was probably a Bible on the shelf in their house. There was probably a church down the street. They may have grown up in a church and left it. Knowing full well that they made a decision that changed their eternity, that changed their life in such a drastic way. But for us, we get passed over. In Revelation, they cried out, "Who can take this book?" And there's the book of life. And it's out there. Who can take this book? And the Lamb comes up and takes the book. Jesus paid for everyone's life. He paid for everyone that is going to accept Him. And if we accept Him, there's just His blood on the page of our life. And we get told, "Good and faithful servant, enter into kingdom." But to them, then, it was incredulous. What happened? Did they take the body? Did the Romans do something? Did the Jewish leaders do something? You know, if the resurrection did happen, it proves this, that Jesus has power over death, even if he's dead. You can personally trust him with your eternal destiny, because he predicted and fulfilled his own resurrection. You can trust the promise he made to you about his intention to raise you from the dead. We don't go to the grave and that's it. We don't go there and then there's just darkness and nothing. We go there so that we can be raised. So that just like the prodigal son, God can put his ring on our finger and white robes for the shabby clothes that we're wearing. That we can enter into the kingdom of heaven and have a feast there. A feast that goes on forever and ever for those who love the Lord. It also tells us that all other religions are not the way to God. You know, we've all heard someone say, "It doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere." But that's not true. I can be sincere and still be absolutely wrong about something. I can sincerely believe that the airplane I'm flying in will land just fine. But if the wheel falls off during landing, no amount of sincerity is going to prevent it from having an accident. And it's the same thing with our belief in Jesus. Either he rose from the dead or he did not. And that's the question we have to ask today. If Jesus claimed to be the only way to God, which he did, then he's rising from the dead is a stamp of approval of a completely truthful God saying that Jesus is in fact the only way to reach him. You know, it's amazing that people don't understand that. You know, and they think, you know, any way you want to worship God, you can, but he's given us a specific way. And it's through him to reach God. So if Jesus did rise, then it has to cause us to think in our lives, maybe this is something I ought to pay attention to. Now, if the resurrection did not happen, then the implications are summed up with what Paul said in Corinthians 15:14. If Christ has not been raised, our preaching is useless, and so is your faith. Paul said, this is not true. We ought to might as well eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And it's like the atheist says, you know, there's nothing after that. We'll all be, as they say, dead all over like the little dog Rover. There'll be nothing after that. So just enjoy your life in hedonistic pleasures because there's nothing after that. But if Jesus did rise, which he did, there's no tomb with his body there. They had a seal put there. They had a great stone put there and a Roman guard put there. So the disciples didn't take the body. No one else took the body. Now if Jesus... Again, if he didn't resurrect, then he's a liar or at minimum a lunatic. Christianity is false. And you've wasted your life believing in Jesus' supposed ability to save you from death. if the resurrection is not true, then you have to come to that conclusion. Some of the best arguments against the resurrection, that people give, first of all, they're going to have to give a reasonable explanation for the existence of the church other than the resurrection of Jesus. Because men do not die, and people do not die for something that is false. And they went to the stake, they went and were crucified, they were thrown to the lions for the pleasure of the Romans. They were thrown into gladiator sports just to be cut up by gladiators. They went through great distress and were being killed left and right. The Jewish authority was very good at that. And in the beginning, Paul was their leader in that effort to destroy Christianity. So for the church to survive is just almost a miracle in itself. And give a rational explanation as to why the apostles believed. They were the closest to Jesus. Now, if they wanted to make a profit off of it, if they wanted to be like some places where you pay a lot of money to learn more and more, and or people encourage you to give because you know you're going to get something back or something like that, and that's not really a sacrifice. If I give you a dollar and you're going to tell me that God's going to give me $2 back, that sounds more like an investment, not a sacrifice. So why the apostles believed after Jesus was dead? Why would they go and die? When they were in threat of death at that time, Peter denied him 3 times and the other apostles stood their distance and explained what happened to the body of Jesus if he didn't rise from the dead. You know, that's the best thing from their arguments that they have to give for that. As if a willingness to suffer years of persecution weren't enough evidence of the apostles' conviction to the risen Christ, the Bible and church history give us confirmation of their willingness to gladly die rather than deny the resurrection. You know, some of them lost their head. Some of them were executed. The only one that might have survived was John, who wrote the Revelation. So they would not die for a lie. Peter had went back to fishing. The other ones had went back to whatever they were doing. Some of them were still stunned and sitting there when word came that Jesus was risen. You know, some people might suffer and die for what they believe to be true, but no one in religious history was ever willing to gladly suffer and die for what they knew to be a lie. You know, none of us would die for a lie. None of us would want to. In fact, if we find out that we've been lied to by the leaders in order for them to have some military excursion or do something that causes loss of life, we get pretty upset at that. So if anyone ever recants a false story, it is when they are faced with certain death. If somebody wants to get you to tell the truth, well, they might do that at the end of a gun or a sword or something like that. You'll certainly recant a false story. The apostles could have denied the resurrection and saved themselves at any time, but they knew it was true and therefore considered this life of little value compared to the commitment for Jesus. And that reminds me of what Paul said. For me to live is Christ. For me to die is gain. While he walked this earth, he was going to preach the gospel of Christ. And he was going to do what he could to spread the church and to keep the church going and to speak out against falsehoods, to speak out against error. But he knew that when he took his leave of this earth, that his life, he would gain heaven. If the disciples knew that the resurrection was a lie, would they have died for it? Of course not. They saw him with their own eyes, touched him with their own hands. They knew he was alive and had conquered death. And that accounted for their challenge, their change in attitude. Their willingness to suffer and their willingness to die as martyrs to prove to the world that the resurrection actually happened. Terrible things happened to Christians in the early days. And it is a miracle that today the church is where it's at today. That we have a church. Because they sure tried to squash it more than they ever tried to squash any other church out there. You know, in Eastern Europe and and in Russia, the Orthodox Christians, they have a tradition where for 40 days after Easter, they greet each other with "He has risen indeed." But for the Christian, each and every day when we rise, we need to realize that He has risen indeed. And my life has changed more than anything else in the world could have changed it. That I can walk with Jesus. That the shabby old clothes that I wear because of my sins are washed white as snow. And that someday, even though I don't deserve it, and I don't belong there, that God is going to come and usher me in. And we're going to share with Jesus His inheritance, which He gladly shares with us. And we're going to walk with Him each and every day for eternity. And when 10,000 years has passed, there's not one day less. You know, it's kind of like a prisoner when he's in prison. He can mark the days off the calendar unless he's, you know, no parole and in there for life. A day that he is going to get out of that prison. But for us, you know, it's not like vacation where, oh, you know, the week's almost over with and I got to go back to work. It's not like that. 10,000 years and there's no less days. No less days, as the song says, to sing His praise. So each and every day and each and every, you know, Sunday we come together and partake of the Lord's Supper like He did with His disciples. And each and every day we can take into account in our heart that if we're saved, we are in a good place. And whatever the world throws at you, and the world can throw things at you. Jesus said, if they hated me, you know, they're not going to treat my servants any better. And the world can throw a lot at us, but we can sing the songs of praise of Jesus even in the onslaught of what the world will throw at us. Because we know in the end, we're saved. And in the end, just like Peter, we stare into that empty tomb and are amazed at the power and the love that Jesus had for us. In conclusion, from Matthew 28, it said, Jesus performed many other signs. Verse 30, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of His disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in His name. Anything greater to wake up in the morning knowing? Anything greater to walk each and every day knowing in your heart that this is what we've been given, that great gift? You know, as we celebrate Easter today, let's not forget the greatest gift we could ever have, and that is forgiveness from God. I don't know what your condition is this morning, or if you have need of the church, won't you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?